Hello and welcome to the IMI's Talking Points podcast. My name's James Skoltok, IMI Motor Pro Editor. In the first episode of 2024, we're shifting away from the discussion about batteries and looking at synthetic fuels, or e-fuels. It's a technology that could become an important part of the mix to keep automotive on the road in a more environmentally conscious future. To explain how and why e-fuels could become a greater part of the discussion, joining me is Algora Castle, Head of EU Affairs at the E-Fuel Alliance. So I guess for the uninitiated, for those who may not have heard of the E-Fuel Alliance, very simple question to start with, but what is the E-Fuel Alliance and what is its role, I guess, in talking about the future of automotive and what fuels it?
Yes. So the E-Fuel Alliance is maybe a little bit different than other associations because we are not focused on one specific sector. Instead, actually, the E-Fuel Alliance represents the whole value chain of the production of e-fuels. So starting right at the beginning from the supply side, all the equipment manufacturers like Siemens Energy, but also new innovative startups like Infineum or Arcadia e-fuels that produce e-fuels, but then also like major oil companies like, for example, ExxonMobil, but also biofuels producer like Neste. And then it goes actually up to the very end, to the demand side, where we have a lot of member companies from the automotive industry, big names like Porsche and also Mazda or Iveco, but also a lot of suppliers, actually, so automotive supplies. But then as well, the off-road sector that quite a lot of people usually don't think about. So like Liebherr, and then all a lot of clubs that really represent the end users, the consumers, like vintage car clubs or the drivers clubs.
Okay. So it's got a very broad sort of spectrum of people underneath this umbrella then.
Exactly, because they all have an issue. So first of all, they all want really to play their part in the sustainable transition. When you talk to some of our young startups, they really see themselves as part of the solution. But then you obviously, like as I just mentioned with the off-road sector, you have businesses that are facing real, real challenges when talking about becoming more sustainable, where electrification just wouldn't work. And so all these companies have an interest to have sustainable and climate-friendly alternatives to the conventional fossil fuels.
And I guess from my perspective, I have to hold my hands up and say a lot of our focus for MotorPro content tends to be towards battery electric vehicles. It's kind of a reflection of what's happening in the industry, I guess. There's lots of investment, lots of talk about battery electric, so that's something that we tend to cover more often. But in terms of alternatives to battery electric, e-fuels are one of those things. So I guess two-part question, but one, again, another simple one, but what exactly are e-fuels and why are they important to making automotive more sustainable in the future?
So the very easy answer is they are a climate neutral alternative to all the fossil fuels that you know. And maybe I should explain why. So it all starts with renewable hydrogen. You need renewable electricity from solar or power or wind power for the electrolysis to basically split water in the two main elements, which are hydrogen and oxygen. And then you use this hydrogen and combine it through synthesis process with the carbon dioxide. So carbon dioxide becoming from something really bad for the climate can become here really useful. You take the carbon dioxide ideally out of the atmosphere, combine it with your renewable hydrogen, and then depending on the synthesis path or route that you use, you can produce more or less every kind of fuel, gaseous or liquid that you know that exists, that you use as a fossil fuel right now. This can be diesel, this can be methanol, this can be methane, so you name it. And why it is climate neutral, so why it is a climate neutral alternative to the fossil fuel is, as I mentioned, you take the CO2 beforehand for the production, and then when you use, so when you combust, when you burn your fuel, then you emit basically just the amount of CO2 that you captured before. And this makes it climate neutral.
Yeah. And I guess this is because we all have heard the statistics, and the rate of uptake for battery electric vehicles is picking up, but they're still a very small part of the total motor vehicles on the roads. But this is a way that we can continue to use combustion technology without the detrimental effects that traditional combustion fuels have used, I guess.
Well, exactly. So battery electric cars will definitely be one of the main answers to make transport, particularly road transport, more sustainable. However, we can also actually make the conventional cars, the conventional combustion engine, more sustainable as well. And this is something that just shouldn't be forgotten. So basically, the problem that we have is not the engine itself, but it is how you power this engine, and it is the fossil fuels. So instead of thinking, I desperately need to change the engine, you can also think, well, actually, what I really need to do is to get rid, to substitute the fossil fuel, which is the main reason for the global warming. So instead of using fossil petrol, you can basically use an e-fuel for your car. So this is something we should really think about, because when we're talking about electric vehicles, we should bear in mind that just because we don't see any emission at the tailpipe, in fact, they don't have a tailpipe, but because they the car itself, the vehicle itself doesn't produce any CO2 or doesn't emit any CO2, it doesn't mean that the car isn't quite CO2 intensive. Most of the time, we forget that an electric vehicle comes with quite a big backpack of CO2. And this is because of the production of the battery. As you know, we need a lot of raw materials for the batteries, and mining is still a hugely energy intensive process. So that's why batteries are very CO2 intensive, and most of them come from China. So the carbon footprint of an electric vehicle is quite big, and it needs roughly about 62,000 kilometers, and only when it's powered with renewable electricity to be really compared to a normal ICE vehicle climate friendly. So in some countries, actually, I'm just thinking, for example, of Poland, where the greenhouse gas intensity of the electricity mix is really high. Actually, in Poland, for example, combustion engine car, a conventional combustion engine car running exclusively on e-fuels would be by far more climate friendly than an e-vehicle.
Okay, that's interesting. Because we know there are, and you've mentioned them, the challenges that battery electric vehicles face. And e-fuel sounds like a really interesting way to help us achieve our CO2 reduction goals, but without having to bring in a completely new technology. But there must be challenges to the e-fuels and getting them into the mainstream. So what kind of challenges is the technology facing at the moment, and what needs to happen to take it into the market mainstream?
Actually, the technology itself doesn't face a lot of difficulties. But of course, there are certain obstacles and constraints. Unfortunately, the very first and big one that we are facing at the moment are political ones. So this market, let's say the e-fuel market and not so much the technology, is still in its infancy. So e-fuels are obviously, like renewable electricity was at the beginning, still compared particularly to fossil fuels, obviously much more expensive. But these costs can come down. So there are forecasts that sees the production cost of e-fuels in 2050 somewhere between, and I'm talking now in euros, somewhere between 70 cent and 1.3 euros. But for this, you need incentives. So you need really big industrial scale production of e-fuels. And to have this, because we're talking seriously here about millions of pounds or euro or dollar that you need to invest. And to do this, to be ready, you need incentives. So the companies need to know, okay, if I put so much money in this production plant, I have to be sure that actually there's a market for me, so that there is a demand. And there's certain political developments, like, for example, banning the combustion engine, which would basically mean the biggest market, the road market, would not be there to offer e-fuels. So this is highly disincentivizing, actually, instead of intensivizing. The other constraint that we are facing is all the rules, what actually qualifies as a sustainable e-fuels. So as I mentioned, you need renewable electricity at the very first place, but you also need CO2 as a feedstock. And yes, you can capture CO2 directly from the air, but also this so-called direct air capture is also still a very young technology, still quite expensive, which also then, if you use it right now, would make the e-fuel very expensive. But a cheaper way to capture CO2, for example, would be to use the industrial CO2 that, for example, is unavoidable when you look at a cement factory. So you could use this. But then, for example, the delegated acts that the European Commission presented, setting out sustainability criteria, a kind of end already quite early, how long you can use CO2 as a feedstock, like industrial CO2, which is difficult because you need a certain time for the investment to become profitable. And then another huge problem that we have, that in this provisions, in this sustainability criteria by the European Commission, it says that this CO2 has to be captured in countries where a effective carbon pricing mechanism exists. An effective carbon pricing mechanism is, in the European Union, the EU emission trading system. The problem is we don't know what the Commission means, what qualifies as effective carbon pricing mechanism outside of the European Union, where you don't have such systems. And this would mean that in a lot of countries outside of the EU or of Europe, where you have brilliant conditions because the renewable energy is very cheap or the electricity is very cheap, but you can't use industrial CO2 because there is, or we don't know if there is actually an effective carbon pricing mechanism. Okay. So all these questions actually make it quite difficult to move forward and particularly to make e-fuels cheaper earlier.
Yeah. Is there progress being made though? So are there signs that people, politicians, I guess, are more eager to talk and discuss e-fuels as an alternative and to try and make the the landscape easier for them to be adopted?
Well, yes, definitely. And this is our job. So this is what the EFIL Alliance is doing. So we are really trying to make politicians, decision makers understand that e-fuels can be part of the solution in the sustainable transition. And what we can see for the first time, it was only this year that the so-called Renewable Energy Directive was revised. And for the first time, you have a sub-target for e-fuels being supplied to the fuel market in the EU. So such a sub-target or such a quota didn't exist before. It is now there for the first time. It is now EU law. And this is already a progress. However, the sub-target could be more ambitious. A more ambitious sub-target would mean that there is a kind of guaranteed demand on the site. So you have to produce it. It will be. And the higher it was, but still feasible, the more it would have been, obviously, an incentive. Another sign that we can see is actually that in some regulations, they're not finalized now, but in some regulations, there are forces, there are politicians who want to see renewable fuels, because you don't only have e-fuels, you also have sustainable biofuels or biofuels in general, where they want to see them as part of the CO2 emission standards for vehicles. So basically, the CO2 emission standard for vehicles at the moment, just look at the tailpipe emissions to assess the GHG intensity of a car. And you have to meet those two reduction targets that are becoming stricter and stricter. And actually, for passengers' cars, by 2035, the Commission suggested that they should be zero. The problem is that with e-fuels or renewable fuels, even though they're net zero, they always emit some CO2, but only the one that has been captured before. So by definition, they can't, if you just look at the tailpipe, they will never be able to fulfill this reduction target unless actually you change the methodology. And you have that type approved that say, okay, this car is exclusively running CO2 neutral fuels, like renewable fuels, like e-fuels or sustainable biofuels. And there is a discussion going on right now, but it's not finished and it's not clear. And we have to do a lot of education and to show that renewable fuels can be and should be part of this, because at the end of the day, we need the targets, or the challenge in front of us is so big, so we can't even afford not to use a climate-friendly technology that is available there. We need a mix of different technologies also to accelerate the phase out of fossil fuel. We're not there yet, so the next couple of months and weeks will be actually quite interesting. So maybe we can talk at another point again.
Yeah, the follow-on conversation. So where is the market now then for e-fuels? What is the current state of play?
So I just told you that it was only now, so this autumn, that the Renewable Energy Directive was for the first time foresees a sub-target for e-fuels. So saying yes, there should be a demand. So this happened only in September. And then only this summer, actually, we had the sustainability criteria in place, the provisions that say, yes, this fuel qualifies as a sustainable e-fuel and can be counted against the renewable energy targets from the Renewable Energy Directive. Before this, we didn't know actually. So if you were a company and you want to invest in a new plant producing e-fuels, you wouldn't really know, would actually my plant produce an e-fuel that qualifies as such, ones that would be accepted. So we didn't know this. And this is the reason why you don't see a lot of e-fuels around, because we had to wait for these provisions. Now that they're in place, we see that a lot of investment decisions are being taken. Now we finally see offtake agreements, but this is a process that really only kicked off a few weeks, months, well, let's say a month ago. So it just started, and I think we will see basically really an uptake of e-fuels in the coming years. But the process with these two very decisive pieces of legislation has finally started.
Okay, so the foundations are starting to come into place then. So journalist's favourite question, looking into your crystal ball at the future, where do you think, or what do you think the future can hold for e-fuels?
I mean, we're now talking a lot about the automotive sector, which is about road transport. And obviously, road transport would be the biggest market right now for e-fuels. But actually, as we said, in road, you also have the possibility of e-vehicles. But markets where you can't easily or maybe at all electrify are aviation and maritime. So, and this has been realized, and this is where, of course, a lot of investment will go to, basically to produce an alternative to fossil jet will be e-jet. And this, but when you produce, so just to have this in mind, when you produce e-jet, you also have always the co-product of e-diesel. So it would make sense to use this co-product also for road. But however, what makes e-fuels even really convincing, for example, aviation, is that e-fuels are scalable. When we're talking about aviation, usually you might have heard this expression SAF, meaning sustainable aviation fuels. And this also comprises renewable fuels, mainly biofuels. But the problem with biofuels is that you can't really scale them up. They are sustainable biofuels are basically based on certain biogenic waste products like fats, or, you know, like used cooking oil or some completely new technologies based on algae and so on. So as you can't really scale this up, the feedstock will reach a plateau at a certain point, somewhere between 2030 and 2024. You will need additional sustainable fuels to close the gap between the availability of biofuels and the demand that these sectors will actually need. And this will then happen mainly with e-fuels, because there you don't have these restrictions and you can scale them up.
Okay, well, that's all the questions that I had. Thanks for joining me.
No, I mean, thanks for having me, James. I really like your podcast, and it's a pleasure to talk to you.
I'll take that compliment every day of the week. Thanks to Al Gore for joining me, and thank you very much for listening. We'll see you again on the next podcast.